Hey guys, I wanted to say that I'm sorry that I was late for the recording. I was running a few minutes late. I had to take a bunch of laxatives.
All right.
Because I was getting ready to take a big shit on these games.
No! Fucking X-Bot Justin, we haven't seen you around these parts in a decade.
Yeah, I'm back. I'm back. I've got my Kinect. I have four Kinects streaming straight to me.
I see you've got a cardboard standee of Blinks the Time Sweeper behind you.
Yes, that's true. Me and the brute force are back to take Earth back from the Sony cronies.
Is that, wait a minute, is that Peter Molyneux's weird virtual boy child behind you? Interesting. Yes.
Milo.
Where'd you dig Milo up?
It's Milo. He's back. I am actually an android. Inside me is a tiny Kudo Sonata who is powering my body. You can see the bottom of his shoe if you want to.
See that. Oh my gosh, Justin just scanned a skateboard into his Kinect and he skated away!
Whoa!
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of 2007.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know two games of 2007.
My name is Chris Plant, and I am the god of Drake.
My name is Russ Frenchick, and I know the best game of the PS3.
What were those words?
I got there.
Welcome to the Besties, where we explore the latest and greatest in home computer entertainment. Usually we're talking about the new games, the hot stuff, but today we are dipping into 2007 to continue our ongoing series about the best of that year. We've already talked about Portal.
Not just that year, Justin. It is the best video game year of all time, according to our listeners. So I don't want to diminish it.
This week may not be the best sort of cross-section for that to stand true. We play some good-ass games.
We do.
And I think this episode we're going to have to be careful because, like, more than any episode so far, like, this is the one where I had to remind myself, like, we loved this shit. Like, this shit was so important when it came out, and we were fucking hog wild for it because I was not maybe as hot. Now, Justin, you've been doing a fun little visual gag series throughout this little run we've been doing. Do you want to talk about it or?
No.
You don't want to talk about the gentleman who's in the background of your Skype window right now?
It's my friend Kratos.
It's Kratos.
Yeah, Justin does have a sort of makeshift Kratos.
Finding like the DIY cosplay and playing that during our different recording sessions. But I feel like I've taken us off the rails with this one. Usually it's a pre-show kind of delight. So we're going to go back to just a regular.
Thanks. And there was like a visible nipple, like right at the bottom of your screen. It was rough. Okay, so.
We don't have time to fuck around. We have two games to talk about. Today we're going to be talking about Uncharted Drake's Fortune and God of War 2. The logo for God of War 2 in the PlayStation Now store looks a lot like the logo for God of War 3. And I did enjoy the first hour of God of War 3 before I got stuck and had to go find a walkthrough. And then I'm like, I don't recognize any of this. I'm Googling like God of War 2. Like, I don't recognize any of this. Like, okay, this is the triple I've been playing. Let me hop back. So I have a lot more context than you guys do.
Yeah, I'm surprised that you would confuse them because they're so different.
I played both of these on PlayStation Now. I hardwired real quick on PlayStation Now because I hadn't actually gotten deep into that. Really good, like especially hardwired. Really good experience. PC a little bit annoying because I had to log in and the CAPTCHA every time I booted it up, weirdly. Like, it didn't save any of those credentials. Also, a little bit stressful because it has a feature where if you are just sort of sitting on the server for too long without playing, it kicks you off.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And in PlayStation 2/3 era, when, like, if you didn't save, you're just boned. I lost some progress a couple of times having to, like, take care of my kids or answer a call or something like that. But overall, just quick plug in PlayStation Now. Really good, especially on the console. Like, no detectable lag for me on, like, Ethernet.
Yeah. We should frame this because it's weird that we are doing two games this episode. But I think that it is an interesting sort of conversation launchpad, because these two games, I think, represent the bookends of their respective consoles. The God of War 2 is one of the last sort of great AAA PlayStation 2 games, and Uncharted came in a year after the PlayStation 3's launch, but the PlayStation 3 had a famously very sort of rocky launch, partially due to the asking price, which was, what, $600 for the larger memory capacity version and $500 for the smaller memory capacity version. But also the launch titles for the PlayStation 1 were, there weren't a lot of them after the launch window. We had, what, Resistance, Fall of Man, and fucking Motor Storm, I think, was in there.
Yeah.
It was also backwards compatible, so you could play God of War.
You could play God of War. I guess that's another important. But Uncharted came in late 2007, which was like that post E3 2007 groundswell for the PS3 was like real good for it. I looked at E3 2007. That's where they showed off Uncharted, Heavenly Sword, Little Big Planet for the first time, Gran Turismo 5, GTA 4, you know, Final Fantasy 13, like all of those started to sort of rear their head around there. So this is when, like, I think Uncharted was, I think, for me, like the first kind of killer app for PS3,
yeah,
where it was like, oh, this is what this can do.
And yeah, there had been exclusive before, but this to me feels like the rise or the evolution of like the strategy of like, we're going to sell consoles because of these exclusives, whereas previously they were like kind of fringe benefits. And I think we're still living in that age now where, like, obviously Uncharted, Last of Us, you know, games like Ghost of Tsushima and stuff like that, like, these consoles differentiate themselves, or at least Sony specifically differentiates itself a lot by its exclusives, where I think Xbox hasn't as much. It feels like this was the beginning of this, like, era of priority.
Yeah, I think the other thing to give a little more context to this is, this is, at least for me, when Sony really leans into video games as cinematic art. And Sony, as a company, has always had a history of this. I mean, they've always been about hi-fi. They sell a version of the Walkman now that costs like hundreds and hundreds of dollars so that you can have lossless audio, right? Their film program with the original Spider-Man trilogy was around-ish this time. I believe that the Spider-Man trilogy and the PlayStation 3 are the same font. But there was this kind of merging of all of Sony hi-fi branding into this ultra-sleek, expensive cinematic experience that you couldn't get anywhere else. And I think we see that both with God of War 2. I don't know if y'all, it sounds like people did not enjoy revisiting it. Talk about a game that is like pushing at the edges of what the hell PlayStation 2 could do.
It's
like amazing. It's incredible what it's accomplishing on a purely technical level. And same with Uncharted 3, which, y'all, like, I get it. The other Uncharted's look way better. But this is like when you go back and watch Toy Story 1, when you're like, oh, no, Andy, what is wrong with your face? You got left in the microwave. But at the same time, you think about, like, oh, they just didn't make anything like this before.
Right.
It's, like, not bad for, you know, for a first try. Not bad.
I thought visually, actually, Uncharted still looked pretty decent. It did not bother me.
We talked about Halo 3, what was it, last week or the week before? Yeah. And if you went back and looked at the graphics in Halo 3, specifically the faces in Halo 3, like what Johnson looked like as a human being in Halo 3, he was like a Minecraft character, effectively.
It was
pretty bad. So if you compare that to the faces in Uncharted, it is like, whoa, crazy impressive that they were able to pull this off.
My hang up with both these games has nothing to do with the visuals. I think I agree. God of War 2 looked miraculous. My enjoyment of God of War 2 spiked every time I remembered it was on the same console that had you know, fucking Final Fantasy X or whatever on it. Like, it looks spectacular. And I think Uncharted looks great. What you also have to remember is in 2007, every single game was gray and brown and tan. And that's it. And this takes place in these beautiful, lush environments with all these details. Like, I think it looks spectacular. The faces look, you know, good. The animations are fantastic. And I don't know. I think both these games have a core question that, like, I couldn't answer playing it, which is, like, these games represent a time where we thought a very certain thing was fun to do in video games that you don't really see in video games anymore.
What's that?
Well, I mean, it's a few things. One is both these games have a type of platforming that was so, like, it burned so bright and fast, like a dying star, of just like, here's a wall with some ledges on it, and then there's some sections of the wall that are a little bit rougher, and those are the ones that you can just climb up, and then there's some vines you can jump and swing to. That's not like, I didn't realize how bored with that I was. And Uncharted at least mixes it up a little bit. God of War, like, every time I saw a platforming section coming up, I was just like, oh God. And it just felt like this unnecessary kind of third heat where they're like, look, it's more than an action game. It's more than a third person shooter. It's got jumps too. And just after the first couple sections of that, like, I dreaded every other sort of thing that happened. And that's a lot of Uncharted and a lot of God of War 2. So that's, like, off the bat, like, oh no, the platforming in these games is, like, and it was so common back then to just find this sort of filler platforming junk in games like this.
There's weird ticks that both of these games have that you don't realize are of a time until you see them. One is, like, balance beams.
Yes.
Which are terrible and have never been fun in any video game ever, but people just, like, did it. Mm. Another thing that you see in both these games is, like, weird pathfinding with, like, just not knowing where the next thing is. And both of them have, like, some real kludgy ways of addressing that problem. In God of War, after you do something, the camera's like, over here, come with me. I'm going to show you a net wall. Do you see that net wall? Okay, do whatever you want now. Uncharted has a button where it's like, you're lost, aren't you? Fuck. Okay, just wait. Hold on. Press this hint button. And by hint, we mean we didn't design the level to show you where to go next.
Or, like, Elena will, like, shout at you and be like, yo, dog,
it's this way.
I think the core, like, loop of each game is also just fine. Something like Portal, right? Like, you don't even need to dress it up. Just, like, creating portals and bouncing around is super fun. And everything on top of that is gravy. And I think about games like Uncharted, where that series has to look beautiful and has to have all these cinematic sequences, because, y'all, the running around, even in Uncharted 4 and shooting, is just not fun. It is okay at when you're lucky, and it is, like, incredibly dull at its worst. And to some degree, I think that's true of God of War also. It's somewhere between a high-end action game like Devil May Cry and just a general beat-em-up. So what makes it exciting is when it, like, has scale. Like, that was what was fresh about that game, was you could see, you know, the end of the stage and this giant statue would come to life. But then the stuff that, you know, filled the time between that was, like, largely filler. And I mean, the greatest thing that God of War did, and I'm sure, like, hardcore old time fans will hate this, but was get away from that. Like, changing the most recent God of War to be something where that moment to moment action feels good makes it so much more compelling.
I will say this. I still like the combat in God of War 2. I still think it's fun. I agree with you that, like, everything else, the running around, most of the puzzles are not, haven't aged, or I don't even know if I, like, love them to begin with. But I think the combat is still enjoyable. It doesn't solve the, like, now obvious tone issues God of War, which are numerous. But I don't know. I think the combat's okay.
Let's talk about tone issues real quick. Ludonarrative dissonance is something that we have talked about. It became a thing right now. I know it has been talked about ad nauseum, but I want to talk about the first beat of Uncharted.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Yes.
The first beat of Uncharted is this. Nathan Drake, lovable scamp, and Elena, his friend and reporter who he is working with, find a they're doing like a deep sea dive. They found this coffin. It's empty. There's treasure inside of it. There's a treasure map. And then all of a sudden they hear noise, and Nathan Drake's like, oh no, them's pirates. And Elena's like, that sucks. And Nathan Drake, that irascible rogue, and he's like, don't worry, I have an old trick in my deck.
A little life hack.
This is an old rogue's trick for scamps and bad boys. It's called mass murder. I wish they had had, I would respect it so much more. This would actually be my favorite game series. If he had like turned to her and been like, I got a thing for it. I'm going to kill 30 people right in front of your fucking eyes.
The craziest thing about that opening sequence is, I think in later games, they're a little bit smarter. Well, they'll have the enemies like shoot at Nathan and he'll like hide behind a rock and be like, uh-oh, the only way I can get out of this is to shoot back. In right. this situation, all he sees are just motorboats driving to him. Like, that's it. And it's like, whoom, whoom.
Here's a gun, Elena. Like, sorry, neighbor, you stranded? Seems to be having some boat trouble. You'll never take my map. What map?
He hands Elena the gun, and he says, you know how to use this. She says, yeah, it's just like a camera, right? You point and shoot. And I wanted him to be like, no. Like, a camera films people. With this tool, you're going to end. This was that guy over there that you're about to shoot and kill used to be a baby. And I want you to think about that, Elena. It's important. I think about that every time. Elena, every time I shoot a pirate and kill him, I think about the fact that he was born a baby and grew up, and I'm going to terminate that life.
Every time, 20 minutes later, he says to Elena, do you have a gun? And she's like, yeah, of course. And he was like, wow, Elena, you live for this now, huh? You're like, great. You get it, right? You get my thing for murder. You see why I love it so much, and now you love to do it too.
Here's to just sort of focus this on Uncharted for a second. I did not like love Uncharted 1 when it first came out. And then obviously Uncharted 2 comes out and is fucking incredible. Uncharted 3 gets a little too big for its britches and is kind of it falls off a little bit more. And then Uncharted 4, I think they find kind of the right balance. That even Uncharted's are where it's at. But like, I don't think ultimately like the platforming and the gunplay doesn't actually change all that much. So I think it's a question of pacing, right? Like how much you mix in these big set pieces and these big sort of interpersonal moments in with this stuff. And Uncharted 1 like does not have that consideration at all. I do not know how long is an appropriate amount of time to go in a video game before you get an achievement telling you that you've killed 100 people, but it's not like 45 minutes in. That's like a lot of people. That's more than two people a minute. Like it's insane. And these segments go on for so long. Like very, very first level after the plane crash, you're in the jungle and you come across this like pretty big little playground with stone archways to climb up on and lots of boxes to take cover on. And there's like five guys in there. You're like, oh, five guys, I can do that. Pop, 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 pop. And then five more guys come in. I don't know if you guys remember the exact segment I'm talking about. It goes on for forever. Like maybe 40 guys just right there. And it's after that, it's just like, I am fucking done, guys. I do not want to do this anymore.
It's one way that's interestingly, despite its like very like not cool tonal issues, God of War is actually more consistent. I think sure, in that sense, like you definitely get the sense that like this is Kratos, he's got a one-track mind, he's coming for this guy. And I feel like even the everything about the, even down to animations, right? Like if you see Kratos as like this thing of vengeance and that's all he cares about, even the animations where he's like jamming his swords into like a roof while he's like climbing on it feel like this like absolute madman with like a one track like collision course with whoever he wants to destroy.
Yeah, I think it only feels weird in the context of the new God of War. Like having played that, you like realize, because I remember when I was playing God of War 2, it all, as you said, it felt consistent with this like dumb guy that all he wanted to do was punch the hell out of everyone for revenge.
Right.
And now
the sirens suck.
Oh no, I mean totally. That, it's,
I mean,
gross.
There's parts. Yeah. I know that you were just saying how you loved all of it, but oh, no, I do want to raise a flag.
That's fair.
With one part that I played where you beat these naked women with your huge swords, and then they're topless, and they have, it's not like everybody's running around topless. So far, it's just these, and you beat them with your swords, and then you grab them and break their backs to make them scream to help basically open a door. They're basically turn them into keys. Not good. There's worse in God of War 3, honestly.
Way worse in God of War
3. Way worse. Like, using chunks of women to, like, keep doors open and shit like that.
And getting
miserable.
And getting a fucking trophy for it.
No, I tried to listen to a story recap, and I don't know if you know the story of the God of War series, but it goes a little something like this. Kratos, tricked by the gods, kills his own wife and his child. So then he's like, oh, I gotta forget this. So then he forgets it. But then the people who are helping him forget it, he kills them. So then he wakes up and he's like, oh no, I killed my wife and child. So then he's really sad about that all over again. But then the gods are like, you know what? We'll bring your daughter back. You can have your daughter back. And he's like, cool, thank you. And they're like, but it's going to be the end of the world. And he's like, sorry, daughter, time to go. You're done, because now I got to save the world again. It is literally him just living the same kill your wife and child over and over over agony like 4 or 5 times.
Yeah, he's not a happy guy.
He's
not.
What's
so frustrating
happy.
About it is that, like, God of War, the new God of War actually is, and I don't think video games have ever done this, actually recontextualizes all the stuff in these games to where going back to them is actually weirdly more palatable. Because not the obviously like violence against women stuff, but like the what a absolute doofus this guy is.
Yeah.
Like, well, knowing that he has to reckon with this later is actually like weird. It's a very weird thing to go back to.
The new one is written and directed by Corey Barlog, who was the co-writer and director on literally this game on God of War 2.
Yeah, took over from David Jaffe, who became creative director. On this one.
Yeah, I think you, we won't go into credits, but I will say, like,
no, let's go into it, man. Let's do a whole fucking Jaffe series, baby. Let's get into that.
I'm downloading Drawn to Life right now. Oh no, my PS4 says it's not allowing me.
Oh,
I've turned on nanny protections.
I just want to snap into a big bite of that Jaffe taffy. Let's just have some fun with it.
We got a question, and I know we'll get to mailbag later, but I think this one's relevant, from our boy McGlam. Who said, I started playing the Uncharted remasters and PS Plus put them up for free, and while I know most are supposed to be great, I'm honestly curious how one got a sequel at all, because woof. I think that is kind of relevant here of...
The first
Uncharted game?
Uncharted, yeah.
Okay. One thing we did... What you lack the context of, I think, if you didn't grow up in this time period, is that the tone with which they were treating, and this is why the dissonance, right? There, I don't think, at least in 2007, you saw action games attempt this amount of personality in your lead character, like a sort of like realist. I mean, it's not that big of an idea, right? It's basically, let's do an Indiana Jones, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, let's make a guy who's a little bit more relatable of an action hero, which is why these things tend to stick
it's
out.
It's called Tomb Raider, but with a guy.
I would argue Lara Croft is not like accessible in the way that they were trying to make Nathan Drake. Tomb Raider was very like, this is not a slam against Tomb Raider, obviously. It's also a foundational, like, incredible series, but like, even the first Uncharted game does introduce a level of, like, he gets shot at, and it's like, oh, shit, crap.
Well, and it's also the relationships, too. It treats conversations like they're important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which
yeah.
Most action games did not do at this time period, which then felt very sort of like, wow, you can do this. Also cinematic in a way that games weren't as much in this time period.
Also, just pulling back the curtain on the games industry making AAA games in general, you can assume that they're going to make more of it. Like, you, when you're making something this big and expensive and it's at the beginning of a console cycle, the plan was always to make more. You make the first game to get the tools ready, to get an idea of what the game even looks like. It's there is much proof of concepts as you can have. And then with number two, that's when the really big ideas come in. I mean, look at other games that came out this year. We're not talking about them on their own episodes, but Mass Effect and Assassin's Creed. It was the same thing. EA and Ubisoft put gobs and gobs and gobs of money into these ideas, And then the second ones were, they actually had time to make the game they wanted to make because they weren't worrying about tool design.
Yeah. Also, they were so desperate for a, not a mascot necessarily, but like a Master Chief for PlayStation 3. Like a...
Mascot spot on.
I guess mascot is a fair... Yeah. Yeah. Anybody to pad up the roster of PlayStation All-Stars Battles Royale game.
Can we talk about QuickTime events?
Yeah,
sure.
One of the best moments in... Okay, not best moments, but there's this cool moment in God of War 2 when you have to unhook these giant horses and you're gonna steer them. And it's like, whoa, this is awesome. Like, they're so mad. The scale in this game is phenomenal, especially with like a PlayStation 2 game. But you unhook these giant, like, mechanical horses pretty much, and you're like whipping them to take them to where you need to go as you pursue the fates. And there is a mini game where you have to move your thumbstick in like making like little Hadoukens, like making a bunch of little Hadoukens.
That's how you do it.
Punches.
That's how,
with the stick.
That's how you control horses, Justin.
And it was, it took me, I mean, literally like 15 tries to get these dumb thumbstick motions right. And both of these games will just kick a QuickTime event out to you when you think you're watching a cinematic. They'll just like kick one out to you, like, oh yeah, press circle or you'll get crushed by a crate. Like,
oopsie.
I'm glad you're enjoying the cinematic, but we are going to need you to press circle real quick. Or, oh, okay, we'll watch it again. But yeah, QuickTime events was a big conversation point at this point in game development.
Yeah, and they obviously went away as more of the criticisms increased. They'd still appear every once in a while, but these days you don't really see them at all. The biggest one that I despise that has thankfully gone away is the, man, this door is heavy. The only way you can open this door is slam circle 50 times. That drove me insane. That is not a fun gameplay mechanic, and it was in every fucking game for like 4 years.
I think that's the stuff I was trying to get at way earlier in this episode, is just there's a lot of filler doesn't even seem like the right word because it is the game. Like, it's not like the thing that is padding out the thing that you really want to get to, except maybe in both these games that is the more sort of cinematic stuff. Like, there's some really great scenes in here or some really huge action set pieces. But before then, you're going to have to open up very heavy doors by tapping circle a whole bunch. And it feels like, certainly Uncharted, you know, by the time Uncharted 4 had come out, they'd moved away from that. And God of War for PS4 is essentially, you know, a harsh critique of all of the God of War games that preceded it. It's just interesting to me. I had forgotten how pervasive those sort of filler elements were in games. And it's interesting that we haven't necessarily seen them a lot in the other games that we've played, although up to this point, I guess we've only played sort of first-person shooters, puzzlers, whatever.
Yeah.
I think this also just shows how hard it is to make a, you know, quote, timeless game, and why we associate that with like Valve and Nintendo. We're going to talk about Super Mario Galaxy 2 next week, and y'all, it holds up just
two
fine.
Or one?
Sorry, one. Thank you. But I think for these other developers, they're really just, you know, taking the biggest possible swing, and they don't even know where they're trying to land. Like, it's like, they went out to make Indiana Jones the video game. They knew that they wanted it to be more personal. They knew that they wanted it to be talky, but they also didn't know how to make a video game like this without you shooting a ton of people, because that's what you do in video games.
Right.
Like, in same with God of War, it was like, we want to make something cinematic. Well, how do we make it playable? I mean, I guess we could do a cutscene, but now we can just add button prompts? And they're like, yeah, man, like, that's fresh. That is brand new and exciting. And it's just, it's hard. It's like, it is hard to create the new thing. And when you go back and visit the original versions, they have tons of rough edges, and you know how it could be done better because you played better games for the last 13 years.
I didn't realize that, obviously, at the time, because hindsight and all, but after revisiting these games, I would posit that, like, we were really at an interesting inflection point in 2007 where our vocabulary for first-person shooters had been developed so much that we were able to have BioShocks and Portals. And these games are sort of, this, Assassin's Creed, are sort of a moment in, and God of War are moments in third-person games where we were like trying to establish that vocabulary a little bit more so you can get to a point where the mechanics are so seamless that you can get to a point where you're doing a BioShock or a Portal without level of like story or innovation. And I feel like what really jumped out was like, wow, the first person shooter games that we've played so far feel so much better than these third person games. And there's like so much more progress, I think, made in third person in the next like 10 years.
Oh yeah. After this. I think that's so astute because that's when we start getting Dark Souls. We start getting, the modern Assassin's Creed games. We start getting open world exploration. Like,
I would argue Assassin's Creed is that like Assassin's Creed is evolutionary in a way maybe that God of War and Uncharted maybe are not. Not to say that they did not evolve from that point, but like everybody yoinked everything from Assassin's Creed. Yeah. Assassin's Creed introduced a ton of shit into the lexicon.
Y'all, shall we go to the next segment?
Yes, let's do it. Come on, we can do this together. Hop on my back. I'm Pegasus. we talked about two sort of hallmarks of the PlayStation franchise, the PlayStation family today. And Russ, you had a fantastic idea. Can you pitch us on it?
Yeah, absolutely. PlayStation, you know, I think everyone thinks about Nintendo exclusives with their wide variety of the cast of characters that we all know and love. PlayStation obviously has had a number of exclusives over the years. Not all of them have been the most memorable, but they've all been interesting. And I wanted to sort of talk through some of those very bizarre PlayStation exclusives that have sold Sony consoles throughout the years.
Two questions. Are we talking about first-party PlayStation exclusives, or are we talking about...
No, I just games that only came out on the PlayStation.
I could talk about Stuart Little 2.
Absolutely.
Which came out just okay.
Yeah, second question. What if it eventually came out somewhere else? Like, so this game, Nier Automata, was a PlayStation exclusive for like a year or two.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way I can like audibly leave the podcast? Is that a possibility?
You want to know the best, like our favorites?
Well, here's what I'm going to, I'll throw mine out. I'll start.
Okay.
When the PlayStation 2 launched, obviously, we all have that moment. Is this a console that I need to buy? I'm standing in Nobody Beats the Wiz. I'm looking at the full selection of PlayStation 2 games. And one in particular jumped out at me, and it remains an exclusive as far as I'm aware. It hasn't come out on any other console. And it's Fantavision. I don't know how you feel about fireworks, but a game about fireworks sounds pretty fucking dope, if you ask me.
Was this a launch game?
This was a launch exclusive for the PlayStation 2. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was originally a tech demo, and then they were like, yeah, fireworks, they look pretty cool. It's a game. I don't know how much they charge, $50. Sell it.
Oh my God, I remember this 100%. Seeing the box art now, I fully, fully recall this bizarre thing.
Now, it got a 6.5 from IGN, but GameSpot gave it a 6.6. So...
They like the fireworks a little more, I think, was the difference.
Wait. Sorry. The beginning of this is from the GameSpot review. Fantavision neither revolutionizes nor damages the genre. What genre?
Fireworks
genre.
Doing? I would be remiss. I didn't know we opened this up to PlayStation 2 as soon as you said that. I was about to talk about Wild Arms or some painful bullshit, but no, I think I'm going to talk about iToy Play instead. Fuck your Kinect. Fuck Fruit Ninja Kinect. Fuck all that. I only want to talk about iToy Play, the camera game that you could play, and it had 12 games on it, and one of them was like a dancing game, so like you don't need Just Dance anymore. One of them was a kung fu game where you had to like swat away things before it touched your shadow. That's like way ahead of the Kinect game. Literally, I'm pretty sure, functionally speaking, about the same level of sophistication. But the best one was, of course, the cleaning windows game where you're a window cleaner and you had to scrub all the suds off the window using your hands that the camera would pick up. And it had this dope ass song in the background that was like, oh, when I'm cleaning windows. And it had like about a 10 second loop that it would go on, and in one round you would hear it 100 times.
Do we need to pay for the When I'm Cleaning Windows song now?
Dustin, if you could find the iToy Play When I'm Cleaning Windows song,
okay.
It's so fucking fresh. I need that remix waiting on it.
Let me see if this is it.
Now I go for cleaning windows to earn an honest bob. For a nosy parker, it's an interesting job. Now it's a job that just suits me. A window cleaner you would be if you can see what I can see when I'm cleaning windows.
That's spectacular.
That's the bop right there.
I feel like we need to editorialize how we feel specifically about the window cleaning song to make sure we don't have to pay for it.
It's a good song.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
A very good song. Let me do mine real quick. And mine is also musical. So please, if you just bear with me, I need silence or else it gets picked up in my track. So everybody just has to be completely quiet while the song is playing, okay? So if you think you're about to, if you feel like you're about to say, like, you can stop playing it now, or that's enough of the song, or anything like that, mm-hmm. just please don't do it because you'll mess up the recording, okay? Mm-hmm. Visuals are fine if you want to cue me when there's been too much. That's fine, but...
Everywhere, everybody wants to hear my Playboy philosophy. Cause I look like stars when I'm smoking my cigar. They wanna be just like me. I know in their hearts they wish and dream that they could be like me. But if they want to know the truth,
turn it up.
Okay, anyway. What was that, Justin?
Fucking Busta Groove?
Fucking Busta Groove. 989 Studios presents Busta Groove, a dance game with some of the freshest tracks on planet Earth. Like Parappa, but good. Very hard to play, nigh unplayable, but a wonderful exclusive. And I want to congratulate our second and third place winners. Blasto featuring Phil Hartman is like one of my go-to when I'm talking about PlayStation exclusives. Not good game, but very funny that it exists. And my probably number one in terms of like fun and playability and like my heart, Colony Wars. Colony Wars. I know the mantle has been picked up by other games, but none of them have ever like felt the way that Colony Wars made me feel, which was like this like tiny ship against a giant fleet. And I loved those. I loved those games.
What was with this mini like bubbling genre of like late PS1, early PS2 of dance rhythm games that were in the Busta Groove style? I just remembered Unison. Rebels of Rhythm and Dance for PlayStation 2. It's all like the same, almost an indiscernible like
Space Channel 5.
Is that Space Channel 5 was Dreamcast, wasn't it?
Oh, sure.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, that genre is not, I don't know, around so much anymore. I feel
Justin, I want to ask you specifically about the Playboy song. What about it spoke to you?
Oh, because we're editorializing about it.
No, I mean, yes, sure.
It's a bop. Makes me feel like a cool dude about cigars and stuff. Also, the video that is with it, it has less than nothing to do with the song itself, which I very much appreciate. And graphically, this thing is really atrocious. the song is just really... I mean, you guys heard it. Griffin lit up the moment it started. Oh, it's a great track. It's really good.
Y'all, I have one. The director of the original Silent Hill, create Silent Hill, right? And then he's like, I'm going to do it again. And then he makes Siren, another like beloved horror series, right? And he's like, okay, now something has changed me. I have watched the film Hancock, and I need to dedicate my life to capturing the beauty of Hancock. How can I do that with the power of video games? And he has an idea. Well, he doesn't really have an idea. He plays Crackdown, and he says, okay, how can I get Hancock and Crackdown, but more me? And he's like, oh, I'm still not sure. So then he watches Bionic Woman. And he's like, okay, now it's all coming together rapidly. And with those three things, he creates a game called Gravity Rush, the greatest Sony exclusive to ever exist.
Wow.
So good that despite nobody in America seemingly playing it, they still made a second one. And they spent a lot of money on it, which is when you know a game is, like, great. In Gravity Rush, think of, like, an open-world game, right? Where, like, oh, in normal open-world games, you, like, walk around, and then you go and, like, I don't know, shoot stuff or drive cars. No. In Gravity Rush, you fall in any direction you like. You aim up. You don't jump. You don't fly. You just throw your body. You change the direction of gravity, and then you fall into enemies, into stairways, into fruit stands. And it is so very, 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 very good. The story is like some real good anime shit. The music is unforgettable. I'm not a big video game music person, but I listen to it all the time on my YouTube. And on my YouTube, I stream myself listening to it. honestly, like Gravity Rush 2. I know a lot of people are not going to check out Gravity Rush 1 off this, but if you tried PS Now to play Uncharted and God of War 2 before your 7-week trial expires, I strongly encourage you to give Gravity Rush 1 and 2 a try.
Let's do some reader mail. I know we already did one quick one in the middle.
I got one for you. We've gotten this question, a version of it, quite a bit, so I wanted to hit it. This is from Juliana. How would you recommend a non-gamer, casual gamer get more into gaming? A good first console or a game that you would suggest? I feel like we have quite a few listeners now who actually don't play games that often, but they enjoy listening to the show. So I think this one's pretty important.
Yeah, I think the Nintendo Switch is the best new gamer console that maybe has ever existed.
Yeah. Hmm. Switch Lite, $200, get in. Like, there's infinite games on it. I think there's like a few. Animal Crossing, honestly, my wife Rachel has played that game every day since it came out, and she is not like a heavy gamer. The same is true for our stepmom Carol, who our dad got her a Switch Lite, and now she has started playing Animal Crossing, and as far as I know, is the first video game she's ever played, and she's put like 100 hours into it. So like, I think Animal Crossing and the Switch Lite is kind of like leading the charge on this in a big way.
Totally. The one other option that I would say, especially if you enjoy listening to this show, is getting a used Xbox One and getting Game Pass. Like, get a cheap console, get Game Pass, and a lot of the games that we discuss, you will be able to check out just by virtue of having that. And then there's a ton of other stuff there that you can try, and try a whole bunch of stuff for a relatively low entry price.
Also, WonderSwan.
Get a WonderSwan. It's very important.
Don't Google WonderSwan.
Google Stadia harnesses the power of
my gosh. Okay, this one's from Cookie Cleric, Crafty Domain. What has been your favorite surprise in a game that totally flipped how you felt about it, for better or for worse? Also, thank you for this pod. I am not a voracious video game player, see? But enjoy learning about games. It makes the times I spend playing richer. So, best surprise that flipped it.
That we've played so far for this series, or just like any video game ever?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
Did I stump you?
I mean, I still really appreciate, I know we've talked about it in this series, but I still really appreciate the twist in Bioshock. I still think it's really interesting. I know we talked at length about it, so I won't go on much longer, but I think it stands out as one of the most interesting twists in video games still.
Not going to talk about Nier's ending. I'm tempted, but I'm just going to throw it out there that I'm not talking about it. But I will talk about Spelunky, figuring out the hell levels, or just all the additional stages and secret endings and the eggplant run. I know that's not a traditional like story twist, but that made me adore a game. I mean, Spelunky is probably my favorite video game because of all of that hidden stuff and the surprise of finding out about those things as the years went on with that game.
I should mention, if you are not a gamer and you are encouraged by Chris Plant's glowing Spelunky review, which I agree with, do not get Spelunky. It is not a beginner's game. You will get very sad very quickly. Very friendly game. But it's great.
True gamers only need apply.
One last question from Oliver. How do you think Kratos would fit into an office workplace environment? What changes to company culture would be required to accommodate the big angry man himself?
That feels like a fucking PlayStation ad from
it does, yeah,
from 2000, doesn't it?
Or a SportsCenter commercial.
Yeah, right.
Which Kratos are we talking about? Are we talking about old man, quiet Kratos? I think
modern Kratos is probably the right choice. I feel like you couldn't accommodate, you know, God of War 2 Kratos. There's no
God.
His appetite is insatiable. He would just destroy everything.
No, but I could see new Kratos having a very popular podcast where he advertises like brain enhancing pills and gets the big thinkers of the day to come on and like, so Elon Musk,
yeah,
explain to me why the coronavirus is a myth.
Do we have time to talk about other games? Because there are a couple of them.
I want to talk about one real quick, and I know Plant and Frush, you dip in. Yeah. Maneater is a open world action game where you are a shark. The best thing I've seen it called is like Crackdown, but you're a shark. You're going around and like eating people and other fish that are progressively bigger to increase your power, and you get weird shark superpowers like electric jaws and bone armor, and basically like cause a bunch of havoc. It's interesting. It's fun in basic ideas. There's some like good locomotion that feels good, like swimming around feels good. But all the combat feels really rough, and I think that it just is too repetitive to really stick with. I did a couple hours in it, and I was like, I kind of got the loop, but I wasn't really that into it. I will say cool stuff. There's a framing device where it's kind of like a Discovery Channel show. Maneater, in the context of this, is one of those like, you know, Deadliest Catch or whatever type shows where they're following a shark hunter, not you, a shark hunter that is trying to eat you. And there's a narrator for the show voiced by Chris Parnell, who has a lot of some lines are pretty funny, and some are just rather dryly observed, and some are just educational, which is great if you want to learn about sharks. But it's interesting. It's not really something I am going to like return to.
I enjoyed it a bit more until I got towards nearly the end of the game, and then the repetition gets worse and worse. But the story that Justin's talking about the reality TV show, surprisingly deep. It goes some interesting places that does not gel necessarily with the game's sense of humor. It gets pretty serious and dark, which is, so far it's been like well written. The only question is, I don't know if I'll see the end of it, because that would involve like eating 5,000 more people to complete 10 missions that are kind of a drag.
I have been playing a bit of Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, which is, I think, a pretty niche title, but I know that Switch RPG fans are looking forward to it. It comes out today, I think, actually, when we're recording this a bit in advance. But and it is a glowed-up version of Xenoblade Chronicles, which is a sort of cult classic, came out on the Wii, and then most people sort of discover it when it's on the 3DS, and this is the sort of, you know, graphically, you know, retouched, redone version of it. The soundtrack has been re-recorded. There's a new, like, post-game, like, story chunk, a pretty, actually, huge one that you can, I think, skip to, maybe, if you've already played it. I don't actually remember. And they've done a lot of sort of, like, streamlining stuff to the interface to make it sort of more approachable, which has always been a huge problem for this game. There's a bit of hubbub about the resolution being subpar, which, I mean, it does not look Breath of the Wild quality, but if you compare it to the sort of muddy textures and virtually everything about the 3DS version, I think it's inarguably like a much better looking game. I've been enjoying it. It's still hard to sort of break into, I think. Have any of you ever tried to play Xenoblade?
I tried to
Chronicles?
Play the second one and was like very not into it.
Yeah, it is either your thing or it is like not your thing. And I think I'm on the side of it not being my thing. I've hit the point that I hit every time that I try to play it. It is a huge game. It is a massive, massive, massive game. And it being on Switch, I think there's something there to, you know, if you need a big ass game to play right now in the middle of quarantine on your handheld, like you could do much, much worse. But it there is something about the bigness of it that still feels kind of empty to me. Like there is a lot of running around these huge, like, you know, neat looking environments, doing a bunch of different side quests and stuff like that. But that's not my sort of jam anymore. But if you've enjoyed Xenoblade in the past or have been looking for like a version of it that actually, you know, looks up to par, then I think this is gonna do it for you.
Oh, I have one very quick shout out. Super Mega Baseball 3. It's by Metalhead Software, and it is, y'all, if you maybe casually like sports games back in the 16-bit or even 32-bit era, and you're looking for something to play that isn't hardcore simulation, this is it. It's not NFL Blitz style, but it's incredibly welcoming, incredibly fun, very
charming. It's like an RBI baseball.
Yeah, ish. It's available on practically everything. I've been playing it on Switch, and being able to just pop in for a couple innings now and then is a real pleasure. And as somebody who really misses baseball and sports right now, it's scratching the itch more than I thought it would. So I strongly recommend it.
Okay, I'm going to do one more super quick one. Dark Knights with Poe Monroe is an FMV game.
Sorry, say it again, the title.
Dark Knights with Poe and Monroe is an FMV game by, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but Deavecki. It's Deavecki. They did The Infectious Madness of Dr. Decker and a few The Shapeshifting Detective, a few other FMV games. And this is sort of like in that same universe, but it is an episodic mystery game following two local radio hosts as they examine supernatural occurrences. I am actually in the first episode. I'm the titular character in the first episode of it, which is a shameless plug, but I think if you like FMV games, then I think it is well worth checking out. You can get it for $12.99 on Steam. So that's my big plug.
Cool. Acting.
Genius.
What are we talking about next week?
Super Mario Sunshine?
Galaxy!
No!
Galaxy?
You fool.
How do you play it?
It's available on Wii. It's available on Wii U. And in theory, someday, maybe this year, it will come out on Switch. There are probably other ways of playing it that are less than legal. And we do not encourage people to do that.
Yes.
But I have a feeling they may or may not exist.
Statistically speaking, you have a Wii somewhere.
Yeah. It's probably a copy of this.
Yeah. I'm very excited. It's a spectacular game, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. And it's also the end of the 2007 series. It's the last episode.
Y'all, we did it.
Yeah, then back to games.
What a road.
Sorry, Mass Effect.
Hey, I'll at the beginning of this, I said that games weren't as good as they used to be. Now it's pretty much an even split. At this point, I'm feeling a little bit more reserved in my praise. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can follow and listen for free on Spotify. Please share the show with folks. Besties.fan is the web address you can share. That's also if you want to reach out to us, mail@besties.fan. That's where you can get at us.
You can also follow us on Twitter @TheBestiesPod. And if you want to follow our newsletter, it is the pinned tweet at the top of our Twitter page. And my child is screaming with excitement in the background about that.
That is our cue. Thank you so much for listening. That is going to do it for this week. But be sure to join us again next week for The Besties. Because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best games?
Best. Feeds is a Spotify original podcast in association with Fox Media. The show is edited by Jelani Carter and produced by Ben Hosley. And our theme song is by Ian Dorsch.
Besties!